Title: Escape from Corn and Chat Rooms. Opening. Welcome, listener. Maybe you found this book for yourself, or a considerate friend has sent it your way via WhatsApp or email or the web. Let's get going and see what lies behind that title. Just to get some small notes out of the way from the get-go. You know that four-letter P word that we all associate with adult content? Regarding that word, I took the decision to swap out the letter P with C. So you will either hear the word corn or the letter P throughout. I did this to not fall foul of a YouTube adult classification. If I'm going to put an audiobook together, why not keep it clean and maximize its reach? This is a minor note that will vanish into the background as the larger themes of the book unfold. Another thing to get out of the way. Voice changer software is used gently and unobtrusively, I hope. There is plenty of content about personal activities that every adult does in private. Activities they do not discuss openly in public. You will be listening to the words of the author spoken by the author. An author who is a regular Joe who would like to remain anonymous. For now, anyway. Summary description. Do you have a corn and chat room habit you are unhappy about? Is it that what used to be a bit of fun has become a problem that now you would like to discard, but cannot? Instead of this addiction kicking your ass time and time again, may this book be used the other way round and actually kick some addiction ass. Introduction. Play, creativity, and exploration make up a large component of all human activity. About 80% of internet activity comes under the overarching heading of play. That can consist of corn, gaming, chat, amusement, and entertainment content. For a whole bunch of people, their play habits have gotten addictive, controlling, dark, and damaging. Regarding your habits around corn and chat rooms, if everything other than your play is difficult, if the fixes that used to write you seem to have been pushed far beyond your reach, then yes, you are well and truly into addiction territory and its associated miseries. Corn and chat rooms go hand in hand. Somewhere along the line, has your play with these gone off the rails? Would you accept that your use of these would now be better labelled as abuse? Is your life getting damaged by habits you cannot get rid of? This book is about solutions and a pathway that leads away from these badlands to a better life for you. A path back to better days and a return to a higher self-worth. Using sense and popular psychology methods, and keeping you away from your perving devices, is how I'd like to help you escape from corn and chat rooms. I found a way out of this damn valley. Here, let me share. Next, to list out the titles of the forthcoming paragraphs. Overall, I am setting out my stall before we get into the meat and bones of your escape. The list. Why the title? What I mean by corn and chat rooms. This addiction kick book is for whom? Setting out my stall and listing what is and what is not found within. A nod to academic rigour. A nod to gaming. Why an audiobook? That will round out the introduction section of this book. Why the title? One tries to hit the nail on the head as to what a book is and is not about, whilst also keeping the title snappy and catchy. Escape from Corn would have been the snappiest, but no, it was important that chat rooms made the title too. Of the two, I personally found chat rooms more addictive. Chat rooms have two-way interaction. P has one direction. These days, P and chat are powerfully integrated well together within sites. For example, these days, you can jerk to a P star and chat with her sexually. For a contribution, that is. When you see the terms chat and chat rooms in this, take it as a given that it is sexual chat being referred to. If I had to give the book a fully descriptive and totally uncatchy title, it would go Escape from Your Damaging Addiction to Corn and Chatrooms Whilst Not Having to Quit Jerking Off and Getting Back to a Better Version of You. So you can see how I pared it down somewhat. Both corn and chatrooms got the mention. Why? Because if it's a slow night with finding something juicy in your usual pee haunt, then there will be a chat site link there blinking at you. Just one click or tap away. On the chatroom side, if nobody is interested in your usual chat haunt or dating app haunt, then you'll likely head to a pee site for a constellation jerk. Both of these help the other one, and in turn, both help sites and apps become more engaging. Addicting, that is. I need to plant a flag at this early stage. You need to quit both. If you stick with me, it will become clear why both must go. Aside. Sometimes I can be a little forgetful. You know those handheld implements that can waft air into your face so as to cool you down? I can't think of the word for those just now. Struggling to recall. End of aside. Anyways, there are a few blockbuster chatting sites and apps running these days. They are lucrative. Extremely lucrative. These sites embody lots of tactics yet to be fleshed out. They create a powerful draw. Later I will be breaking these down for the listener. Now to explain what we mean by chatrooms and corn. Firstly, corn. What I'll say about P is that I will not say anything about P. It is too pervasive, wild, dynamic, subjective, and multifaceted. I may as well be talking about an aspect of humanity as talking about P. I could fill pages with adjectives and generalities which in the end would wind up not telling anyone anything they did not know better for themselves already. For this book, there is not much need to set the scene for P. We all know what it is, and we all know the score. I will not be mentioning or describing corn scenes, genres, or sites or apps by name, as they can be triggering for a quitting addict striving to stay completely away from them. When I need to, I may however drop some hints for the listener so as you can kind of guess what family of site I mean. Chatrooms. By chatting in chatrooms, I mean typing text back and forth inside a chat window with a stranger. In the 90s, I heard a story of a guy from my locale who got chatting to a lady in another part of the world. They hit it off. He moved over there and they got married. I heard no more. When you hear stories like that, then for a single guy, trying your hand in a chat room seems like an okay idea. Then chat rooms changed. And more accurately, I changed. I was not going in looking for a soulmate. I was going in seeking a thrill. The rooms I was now frequenting were about thrill seeking. The rooms I was going into had absolutely zero suitable mates, ever, and I knew it. I lost interest with interacting with actual females, which was too awkward anyway. One could frame the choice as follows. Choose between the hot girl on the net you'll never meet, but may talk with you, versus the one spoken for hot girl from your locality who will never know that you even exist. Yes, that stranger on the screen could be totally lying about who they are. However, if after hours upon hours of chat, if there is consistency, then you are likely talking to someone who is either what they purport to be, or a seasoned catfisher. Me, I logged in, perpetually chased the next shiny thing, never got enough, and never logged off for over 2 decades. Chatroom use, where people are scavenging for a thrill, is what I will be focusing on. To explain the thrill more, there are no guarantees, but if you found a hot one, you were no longer thrill-seeking, you were being thrilled. Hot picture swaps and video chat would follow if things flowed well over the course of some long chats. Trust and respect had to be earned. Such finds were not that common. One would have to go through 1001 false starts and time wasters before one hit upon something good. It felt like a conquest when gold was finally struck. This in turn gave a high and mighty dopamine spike. The sort of high was the hook for addiction to set in, and set in it did. This was equivalent to a big win in gambling terms. Big new highs are instrumental in an addiction taking hold. Spanning apps and websites, there are many types of chat rooms where different types of cybersex occur. Later on in the book, I will focus on DS, dominant submissive, chat rooms. They brought another layer of investment into chatting. That is to say, if you invested more effort into attaining a conquest, then in proportion, that extra investment yielded higher highs. Chatrooms these days now use both typing and camera view. Having a hot woman look at you as she chats with you is very exciting for a guy. That's the scene set regarding chatrooms for now. I will take a more full-blooded swipe at the topic of chatrooms, later on in the book. This addiction kick book is for whom? Addictions are allowed to get so bad for so many people for so long because, well, humans are sort of geared for them. We love to play and we seek pleasure. Our brains react hugely to pleasure given stimuli that we encounter. We can be blind, unknowingly or knowingly, to the mounting negative impacts of our play. Humans are pretty good at denying there's a problem. Finally, when the axe drops, such impacts, such as those as losing a job or a relationship, hit like a cold slap in the face. Ain't much point denying there's a problem then, is there? About 5.1 billion people are online. Sources Statistica.com. Multiply 5.1 billion by 10,000 hours for each person. That's a lot of hours. Well over half those hours are men's hours. A good piece of that are jerk-off sessions. That's a lot of hours of jerk-off sessions. Married or not, partnered or not, it's all the same. What I would say is that in general, of the two, unpartnered have had way more time to spend on corn and chat rooms, so they get tangled in the weeds and thorns a bit more. A cohort out of that cohort would be guys who have had zero luck meeting any lady. They will have had to turn fully to the net for their erotic nights in. Where online jerk-off sessions get dark is that out of those large numbers, we each are likely to have heard whispers about addicts with lost mental health, lost jobs, lost marriages, lost partners, or lost relationships with one's children. We may even know of bankruptcies or suicides. And overall, a lot of good years lost. So overall, I don't know how many corn chatroom addicts there are, but I know there is plausible scope for there to be millions. Corn and chatroom addiction is unspoken of in the media. Done alone in hush-hush, with no public discourse, it means this addiction has unbridled access to its victims. Given secrecy plus shame cycles, addictions will rampage. What's a shame cycle? A shame cycle is A, you feel shame, you feel like crap. B, you get to thinking about a high that excites you out of that state. C, you reluctantly, yet feverishly, do what you do to get that next high. D, the high is attained. It passes oh so quickly. Then you feel shame. Then you go back to A, feeling like crap. Gambling addicts, alcoholics, and drug addicts will at least hear messages on mainstream media that there is help out there and that there is a path to recovery. They hear ex-addicts tell their stories in interviews, and they are given hope. Shame and secrecy have been tackled regarding those addictions nowadays. On that score, corn and chatroom addiction remain untackled. To set out my stall and list what is and what is not found within. They say write about what you know. This is the book I wish I would have listened to 25 years ago. The book has adult themes. In my mind, I would think the listener of this book to be 25 years and up. Obviously, I'm happy for adults of other ages to listen to this. Do you answer yes to any of the following questions? If you were to assess your losses versus your gains when it comes to your use of corn and chat rooms, would it make for sad reading? Would even the consideration of that task be enough to make you bolt towards your usual haunts and to chase the next high to avert your mind's eye from that sad tally sheet? Have you already admitted to yourself that you are an addict to this stuff and are desperate for help? If you answered yes, then please listen on and we'll get into the weeds soon enough. Aside, I must say I like to curse and add oomph to what I'm saying and full-bloodedly convey my frustrations. This book was festooned with foul language in the early drafts. Alas, it was cleaned up though. The way I see it, the less content warnings I get, the greater the reach of the book. Throughout the book, the more observant amongst you may spot when I slip in a curse word without stating it. What can I say? I have trouble with my FU sounds sometimes. End of aside. Back to what is and is not found within the book. It is healthy to jerk off and relieve the body's and mind's sexual energy build-up. Some may call this activity jacking off or fapping or whatever. I'm old school. Throughout the book, jerking is the term of choice. There ain't nothing wrong with jerking off. Jerking is simply hitting the body's natural pleasure release valve for built-up sexual tension. It's a necessity. The adult world is overbrimming with crap that you don't want to do, but you have to do. What's more, it always has to be done at an annoying, inconvenient time. Jerking is one of life's few free pleasures. Thank fiddlesticks too. In this book, I will not suggest that you cut out or cut down on jerking. That's just not a runner for the vast majority of guys, in my firm opinion. We are just too horny. We find our own level of jerking. As you will soon learn, what I will be combating is jerking off with reliance upon a screen. I will detail the difference between healthy jerking off and unhealthy jerking off. To coin the point, this book is not anti-jerking. In this book, I will not shout and chest thump about the way of willpower to overcome cravings. Not my style. More so, the approach will be skill power, insights, and good habits that will win the day for you. Reference and YouTube search skill power over will power. It had 14 million views and it was the TED Talk. Well worth a look, in my opinion. There will be no mention in this book of taking a 30-day no-fap challenge. I see neuroscientist and YouTube giant Andrew Huberman recommended this. That's too tall of an ask for somebody who feels weak and vulnerable as it is. If by some stretch of the imagination a month of no-fap were achieved, that would be a big triumph of self-discipline. Enough distance would have been put between you and your old bad habits that brain changes would have stuck. You'd be a steelier new version of your old self. Who knows where else that degree of self-discipline could be applied? Your life would change for the better. You know that word people blurt out at peak frustration that rhymes with puck? Anyway, so my problem with this long distance no-fap is, well, come on, 30 days? 30 days in a row? Get the puck out of here. I am pro-freedom and pro-freedom of expression. Consenting adults are free to do as they like in my view of the world. If consenting adults want to make corn and publish it, and if lots of people want to jerk off to it, they are free to do so in my opinion. If consenting adults want to chat in an adult chat room and get freaky with each other, then they are free to do so. The overall point is that I am not on for curtailing freedoms in this book. It's just that freedom plus flawed humans means that a whole bunch of us get into bother and could use a steer to get the puck out of the dark and thorny valley of addiction. Education, knowledge, tools and skills are what I propose to steer people away from addiction damaged territory. Continuing on with what is and is not in this book. Academic rigor. There is no academic rigor found here. If I were an academic on this stuff, I would make my points well, that is for sure, but it would be painfully slow going. Academic writing reads like they are petrified of making a mistake that could hurt credibility or one's own reputation. It would be normal in books to outline historical context, current work, and cite the experts. This serves to lay a foundation. Then the academic comes along and adds his or her own layer of bricks on top. This slow going is a burden I do not have. I will get to my points quickly and hopefully it will not be too dull. The book earnestly hopes to help people in need out. That said, if I can make a goofy joke along the way, I will. Relatability, wisdom of years, sense, insights and fresh thinking are what I believe I bring to the table. In the end, you will be the judge of my contributions to this topic. Not in this book. Not in this book is a deep dive on gaming addiction. I cannot say I am a gamer. I never got the habit. I am not equipped to deep dive or talk knowledgeably upon gaming. That's another book by another author that will hopefully reside beside this one on the bookshelf. I believe a gamer's highs, cycles, rushes and addictions are super similar to those a corn chatroom addict experiences. I am aware of damaged lives resulting from the abuse of gaming as well. Why an audiobook? The call of your jerk device, you know the one, is strong, is it not? One of the aims of this book is to give the addict time away from their devices, to reassess and to detox for a period of time that makes a difference. In the audiobook format, you can play this on a clean, non-perv device. You can absorb it easily and let it marinate overnight. That is when the brain change happens. Putting this journey into an accessible format that is the F away from your jerk devices is vital for a good outcome for you. You can't be succumbing to each and every craving of your addiction while simultaneously dismantling it with a self-help book. You need a solid length of time away from those devices. Fair? An addict will not like the sound of this, but I hope to make that idea a tangible reality. Throughout the recording, I will sprinkle in notes about where we are in the book's sections and the overarching journey. The MP3 files that comprise this book will be easy to share via email or WhatsApp. I understand that the mental fortitude and self-evaluation of a guy who has gotten into trouble with this stuff is neither strong nor high. You are hurting. I aim to make this as accessible and relatable as I can. Clear and logical, short points, put informally, is how I intend to roll. I state points, expand on them, restate them, and hopefully leave the listener with some workable takeaways that have sunk in. Sense, science, dismantling problems, and observation are what I will be leaning on. It's a good feeling to have a few new tools in your tool belt to handle life's pitfalls and temptations. Just to check in where we are in the book, we are nearly done with the setting out of the stall. Coming up, who am I and who are you, the listener? That then completes the book's opening. Who am I? I'm a regular Joe, with no letters after his name. A regular Joe who is a recovering addict. A Joe Schmo who has gotten his shit together just enough to get a book recorded. I am and was the quiet, shy nerd type. I am a lifelong people watcher and overthinker. I have always soaked up popular psychology like a sponge. I have a partner these days. Before that relationship, I strung together 20 years of being single and doing what single guys do online. So I went deep on some shit. I'm not the sentimental type, nor an idealistic romantic. So there is not much gushing about beauty and harmony and oneness to be found in this book. Life is managed, not cured. That's a quote from Dr. Phil. That's probably my favourite one of his top 10 life laws too. I recommend you Google his other life laws. Willpower and self-discipline were never strong points with me. Along the course of life, I required skills and tricks to slide by on that score. I am in my late 40s now. Testosterone levels have dropped a bit since my 20s and 30s. It means I'm a tad less horny than I used to be. But on the flip side, I can think a bit more clearly too. I worked in an office and IT, so typing quickly enough to hold conversations in chat rooms was no barrier to me. Put it this way, for me, meeting new people plus making conversations equals awkward and hard work. If you really suck at a game, you don't want to play it. You don't even want to watch it, because then you get to see others making it look easy. You find another game to play. Interacting on a screen was that game for me. So I was susceptible as F to getting too into the net and having no sense of life balance outside of its use. My lost decades of bad habits have cost my journeying down who knows what life paths. So that's me. These days, I'm in a pretty good place though. Aside on asides. As you may have already gathered, I will sprinkle asides throughout the book. They consist of one or two paragraphs, sometimes more, that will aid the current subject flow, but do not naturally drop right into it. Asides will start with the word aside and wind up with the words end of aside. And who are you, the listener? This book was written for a regular guy, by a regular guy, just like you. It's not for ladies. If you're a female listening to this, then kindly stop here. Thanks. No, just kidding. Really, just kidding. You'll see how my writing is that of a hetero guy. If that is not you, your sex or sexuality, I bid you a wholehearted welcome. When I describe typical scenarios and thoughts of a regular hetero dude in this book, I think you can easily do an on-the-fly conversion over to your own sex, orientation, or identity. The listener could be any dude, because every dude is horny, plays online. Now to state what many of you listeners already know. If you're a dude that has F-all outside of the house fun in your life and F-all punani, then you'll wade deeper into the addiction quagmire faster. Three rough subcategories of this cohort. A. There are guys who have gotten laid and sort of know they will get laid again. B. There are guys who rarely get laid and are not sure where their next lay will come from, if ever. C. There are guys who believe they will never get laid. Their mantra is, why try? There have always been guys like this. I see in recent times that an online collective called the incel, a conflagration of the words involuntary and celibate. This movement has taken hold. It is counter-constructive and amounts to personal retrogression. A resent fest. Dead end. Nothing more. Take your medicine and back up the wagon. Subcategories B and particularly C will wind up in the tall, weird weeds. Aside, unwanted exposure to corn. There will be some people listening to this book who have only ever used internet pee to jerk off. If that is you, here are two questions to distill that down in your own mind. Are you reliant on a device to have a jerk? Is that an acceptable situation for you? Unbeknownst to yourself, you may be blind to any other way of jerking off, and that in turn makes you totally dependent upon the net to jerk off. Later, I will lay out how to remove reliance upon any device. A certain section of the listeners will have had porn barge into their unsuspecting childhood mind at way too young of an age. It may have been shown to them by an older sibling or a classmate, or they stumbled upon an open tablet. As a result of finding or sharing effed up stuff on phones, corn stomped upon your developing mind. It confused and worried your mind before it was ready for that shit. If that has been the case for you, I am sorry that it happened. Corn presents to the childhood mind as harsh, bad violence that is weirdly somehow okay. There is a tone set that it is wrong for the viewer to object to it. These are conflicting concepts and raise isolating feelings. Hard images, fastballed straight to the back of young eye sockets. Just wrong. This has been a society-wide mistake born of mass stupidity. To lazily allow innocent youngsters to have their developing minds scrambled by effed up corn content. Yes, mass careless stupidity. Way to go, team. Alas, adult-on-child abuse continues to occur. As we know, this generates untold human damage down the line. Additionally, there are increasing reports of childhood sexual abuse taking the form of child upon child. Source here is a childhood psychologist who did work with Childline. If that is the case, that is one hell of a sick byproduct of being so lax. I'm not qualified to speak anymore on such a weighty topic. With the benefit of my years, I will say no more, except to float the following three ideas. A. A young mind is very plastic and impressionable. It can learn good things and it can unlearn crap things. Good impressions can replace bad impressions. You may have been damaged by exposure from too young of an age, but that does not mean you are beyond repair and permanently damaged. B. There is healing in speaking openly about what harmed you. So speak about it with a trusted friend or friends. Hopefully it comes up on a big podcast and people can go, "Yo, did you catch that episode of such and such?" Then useful conversations will follow. C. As mentioned before, the herd has gotten it badly wrong regarding lax protection. Don't be one of the herd on this score. Don't be led by what's in corn sites creators' minds. You couldn't choose worse leaders for yourself. Keep corn away from your youngsters and be a strong voice and actor for this. The leader on this front is you. The leader is you. End of aside. This completes the book's opening section. Getting to the escape plan. This is a brief note. I am mindful that readers or listeners of this book would not have long attention spans or patience. The most important payloads and takeaways from this book are in the coming pages. So, Mr. Short-Term Attention Span, I hope you stick around. The plan. Here's the plan in one sentence. Break down the bad habits and look at their constituents in different ways. Then keep you away from your usual habits for a spell and allow room for alternative habits. Okay, that was two sentences. Anyway, you've likely heard of mindfulness. Well, the plan is basically applying mindfulness. A discussion of what's currently being done by the experts in these fields, those that I can find, comes after I have laid out my own fixes. Where better to start breaking down stuff than with the act of jerking off itself? For openers, terms and understanding of jerking off. I'd like to break down the stages of jerking off. It will open out the topic, and for the rest of the book, it allows us to refer back to the stages easily. Jerking off, or jerking, is the term seen throughout this book, is about two things. Sweeping out the build-up of erotic thoughts of the mind, and it's about clearing out your pipes. Below I will describe the steps of jerking off, and intersperse the description with vital discussion points and themes. Those vital points will be returned to again and again in the book. The following exercise will raise points and comments that the addict will find familiar. Here is the list in chronological order. I give them each a number and a catchy tag to aid our easy callback to them. 1. Going about your day and boing. 2. Next chance I get. 3. Let's get the party started. 4. The search for that little something something. 5. Mind overload. 6. The nut. 7. How was it for you? 8. Snooze or cruise. It makes sense, for the purposes of deeper discussion, to go in reverse chronological order this time. With no further ado. 8. Snooze or cruise. Your post-jerk activity consists of having a snooze or a cruise, from my experience that is. You have a snooze or you go do something else easy. It could be returning to that thing you had intended to do before you started to jerk. 7. How was it for you? The feelings, physical and emotional, in the body post-ejaculation. You know, after you busted your nut. There is the physical side, that relief of tension, which is all good, and the emotional side, as you mop it up, you may feel anything from good to crap. For the addict, the feelings are mostly crap or very crap. Do the following thoughts ring a bell? Why the F did it take so effing long? I can't believe I jerked off to that decrepit crap. I'm not even into that shit. That sucked. And inwardly going, oh dear. I'll have to be chasing the chase again in another while. And hopefully this time I have a better jerk. All too effing soon, later comes around once liquids replenish. You are back having another shitty jerk that again does not properly take care of the job. There is no sense of completion. It becomes a shitty loop that you kind of become blind to. And say you did manage to have a decent jerk session once in a while. Even then, what are you left with? The post-high funk moves in within an hour. So, where does that leave you? Trying to chase the next high to combat the funk you are in, is the answer I would suggest. 6. The knot. The knot is short for busting your knot. Your central nervous system takes the wheel, your body tightens up, your neck arches back, you twitch a couple of times, your balls and pipes tighten, then expel your ejaculate. The chattering mind silenced. The feeling is one of pleasure plus relief, as you have moved away from the pre-ejaculation discomfort. I think of a decent comparison is to that of popping a pimple. Building tension and building discomfort beforehand, then the pop, then the relief of tension. Some nuts are better than others, are they not? Sometimes you go, boy, that was a good one. And sometimes you go, that was crap, and that did not hit the mark. For the addict, the good ones are few and far between, I would suggest. A piss-poor nut leaked from a semi at some stage throughout your hours of trance click jerking. That's more often what it's like. Familiar? This leads me to one of the first big takeaways from the book. For you, the future ex-corn and chatroom addict, here it is. Your end-of-jerk nuts will be different. They will be better. All of them. Not some of them, all of them. And you'll feel better after each of them too. A jerk with no assistance is better by a distance. The forthcoming approaches will move you away from a high quantity plus shit quality of jerking and towards a better quality and reduced quantity. To explain, these days I just know I'm going to come good even before I start a jerk. I like that certainty. I will not relinquish it. If I got back into using corn in chat rooms, I would lose all that. That idea does not sit well with me. Been there, done that. Here's my one-line convincer, with ribbon on top. How I jerk nowadays is a superpower instead of a debilitation. 5. Mind overload. The mind overloads with erotica, whilst the central nervous system overrides. Your body writhes. The valve for the other stuff that comes out of you is thrown. Your mind overloads with fast and effed up vivid images of eroticism. This is a good time because the pleasure of the nut is imminent and you know it. Needless to mention, you are now jerking off in a frenzy, at full pace and with full veracity. Preceding that we have 4. The search for that little something something. The search for that thing that will get you over the edge. You have been searching for something good. When you find it, the strokes get excited and vigorous. That something-something tends to be a bit wrong and a bit of a surprise. It enters side stage. This something-something is often not that easy to find. The search can be annoyingly long on a he site for an experienced, seen-it-all jerker like, well, you know who. Whatever you arrive at, you'll react well when you see it. There is some reward and pleasure at this point. You are now on the home stretch and getting to the beginning of the nut stage of your jerk. Special note on this step 4, the nut. By the way, this special note takes a while. Best to listen to it in one sitting if you can. You have heard of the chemical dopamine? It occurs naturally in the brain. The brain loves it. They call it the drug of anticipation. It likes experiences that will predictably sustain a base level of it. It likes experiences that creep up the baseline level of it over time. It loves experiences that give an instant uptick of it. The brain gets stressed by disappointments that give an instant downtick of it. It loves experiences that give an instant uptick of it right after it got a downtick in it. The brain remembers where it got it and how it got it. Why? Because it wants more. Makes sense, eh? The following describes a three-part loop that finishes where it started from. Going around and around the loop fires off dopamine creation within your noggin. A. It starts and ends with a tease and chase. You are either teased into or feel prompted to search for a thing known to give pleasure. You begin a search effort. That's the chase. What comes next is either a thrill or a spill. B. Upon successfully finding that thing, there is a pleasure hit, a well done if you will, an uptick of dopamine, a thrill. This instant well done pleasure hit is separate to and comes before any pleasure that is to be extracted from what itself was found. Say you found a chocolate bar in a cupboard that you did not think was there. You have firstly the pleasant moment of discovery, and secondly you have the pleasure of eating it. Here we are talking about that pleasant moment of discovery. That well done, well found, feels good. If the opportunity of another well done feeling happened to come your way, would that entice you? Alternatively, if your search effort turns up failure, then there's a little sting of disappointment. It is a little release of the stress hormone called cortisol. When there is a loss of control, we can expect to experience stress, and then we need a fix for that discomfort. I effing could have sworn there was a chocolate bar in the cupboard. Someone must have eaten it. That's a spill. An uptick in cortisol plus a downtick in dopamine. A discomforting spill spurs you on to make another search effort. You literally need a fix. To replace that disappointment with a well done seems like a nice idea, eh? Say, if the opportunity of another well done feeling happened to come your way, would that entice you? The last of this trio is to go back to the tease and chase. Well, what do you know? What's this being offered to you? Why, it's the tempting opportunity for another search. Another well done feeling. Want to check out another cupboard? Enticing, eh? And you know what? The faster the next tease comes along, the faster the hits of dopamine. For ease of reference, I'll coin this trio as the tease and chase, then thrill or spill. This 1-2-3 will prompt your dopamine circuit to give lots of nice instant spikes of dopamine. The tease and chase, then thrill or spill. The tease and chase, then thrill or spill. A whizzing, fizzing, self-feeding loop that will work on any unsuspecting human over and over. Can't stop clicking? Just one more tap. Just one more swipe. Just one more scroll. That's what we are talking about. Whilst tapping, do you ever catch yourself asking the following sensible question? What's the effing point in having another tap when you know it'll just turn up more crap? Personally, my answer to this is no. No, I do not catch myself asking myself such a sensible question. And no, additionally, I don't notice that I act upon such a sensible argument. The tapping continues. I put that tapping question to you, listener, so as to highlight how much the sensible voices in the mind are stunned into utter silence by the drive of emotive tease and chase, then thrill or spill. As this circuit is cycled over thousands of times in the mind, all the while the memory is doing what the memory does. To find things that it liked again and again, it strongly associates things. It creates, streamlines, and strengthens neural connections, which in time turn into automatic habits. Over time, these become unconscious, habitual behaviours. I can think of no finer an example of this than when you finally snap out of it, look up from your mobile phone, and ask yourself the following: what the F was I just looking at my phone for? Was that a familiar piece of internal monologue for anyone? It is that state of excited expectancy of a nice reward that is right around the next corner. Oh, and if it's not around this next corner, then it'll be around the one after it. Definitely. Scout's honour. The tempt of what might be around the next corner. Will it be a thrill or a spill? The tempt of the next tap, the next click, the next swipe, the next scroll. As stated earlier, dopamine is the anticipation drug. Games and social media apps and blockbuster chat sites exploit the tease and chase, then thrill or spill. Underneath the hood of the user experience, strong brain impulses are generated thanks to the game designer's understanding of brain chemistry. To convey how innate, old and pervasive the tease and chase, then thrill or spill is for humans, the primal brain likes to either feed, screw, flee, fight, or freeze. If it does this, it lives long and procreates. I can guess that this circuitry turned ancient people into tenacious hunters and trackers. For instance, the hunter could get a big high from discovering footprints of prey and piecing together their prey's movements. This conquest paved the way to a major prize. The high would boost morale and sustain the hunter for the duration of the hunt, however long that could be, days maybe, as he closed down upon the prey from its tracks. Like any tool, the dopamine creation circuit itself is neither good nor bad. It's down to how it gets used. A more current example. These days, many drug addicts say the high of scoring drugs is as good as the high from the drug itself. Source here is YouTube, Soft White Underbelly, Drug Addict Stories. Add to that the scoring of drugs after a particularly stressful, frustrating wait is sweeter still. Another example, how the tease and chase, then thrill or spill, regarding some held eye contact from an attractive woman who knows what she is doing. You're never quite sure until it happens. That's the tease and chase. If she notices you, that's a thrill. Potential procreation. Oh, and if she does not notice you this time, that's a spill. Regarding our countdown, step number 4, the search for that little something-something. This one hugely involves this dopamine creation circuit firing off. In the online jerk world, you could be searching for a juicy chat or searching for a juicy pee clip. It could go try, meh, dull crap, try, fail, then try some more, then try again, and then, bingo. In our new lingo, that translates to tease, spill, tease, spill, tease, spill. Tease, thrills. Don't forget the important flip side to the dopamine creation circuit, which doubles its punch. If your laborious search for that something-something ends with a stressful failure, or ends with a false dawn, then the memory stores that up. It stores that stinging disappointment and it churns. It burns into your memory. It plays out on your very next opportunity to search. This time for your high, you'll chase way harder than you had done before, and you'll have a new trick up your sleeve, a trick which the brain has conjured up thanks to replaying your previous failed searches. Assuming this search ends in a thrill, then it will be truly sweet. The dopamine circuit is a fertile ground for developing trekking skills, but also a fertile ground for developing an addictive behavior. We all have this circuitry. It's baked into life. We are all susceptible to addictive conditioning. They pretty much mold computer game architecture to this innate dopamine circuit of ours. An addictive game is good for business. So is an addictive chat site. So is the bottomless scroll of a P site that is tuned into your tastes thanks to a you-may-also-like algorithm. How many other addictive things are doing well these days? Let's list them. Binge-watch TV series, fast food, snack food, TikTok, YouTube shorts, Instagram, Twitter, dating apps, mainstream and not-so-mainstream, gambling sites, Facebook, and other social media apps. Let's not overlook the phones themselves. The mere sight of a device yields a little dopamine hit. Seeing somebody else reach for their phone gives that certain little impulse. I think you know what I mean. Just a sneaking suspicion. As you heard this last piece, did you touch your phone or reach for it for comfort? Did you air scroll? I heard it called gamifying. In the 90s and noughties, it used to be said that sex sells. That is to say, to increase sales and profitability of something, you would sex it up. Gamifying things seems to be what is hot these days. How about instead of gamifying, we name it addictifying? Definition: addictifying. Design that hijacks the human reward system so as to make the user an addict. How about that for a definition? Addictifying sells. Corporate marketers are not the only ones who can spin up catchy, cute little terms. How about we do a little rebranding of our own and prefix the adjective addictifiers before a company name or a site? Wouldn't it be cute if that term became popular and got associated with some deserving brands or trademarks? If the shoe fits. While we are here talking about corporates, what else resides in the marketer's dirty little playbook these days? A. Indoctrinate children with products or services. Get them young and keep them for life. B. Tie the product into emotionally significant days in a person's life. C. Exploit fears of missing out, FOMO, so to speak. That is, fear of falling behind a peer group. When a TV becomes part of a child's life is about when FOMO exploitation begins. D. Reel them in with freebies, giveaways and bargains. Create reliance, then twist the screws. E. Exploit regulatory gaps. Create regulatory gaps, capture regulators, keep the revolving door spinning between powerful regulator positions and lucrative industry positions. No conflict of interest to be seen here, eh? Trust us on this. F. Create and maintain educational blind spots and common knowledge misinformation. G. Sweeten and sucker in politicians so that they cheerfully parrot things such as the effectiveness of self-regulation. H. Fund research by bent scientists that is tilted and rigged but then passed off as independent. I. Fund infomercials and social media influencers who pass off their biased findings as non-biased. G. Cloaking products of conceited ethical origin up as ethical. Peddling empty buzz terms such as eco-friendly, organic, fair trade, and then place them on the shelf right beside similar products that are of honest ethical origin. Greenwashing is a term for it, I believe. H. Sports washing and arts washing. This is where company X sponsors a popular sports team. They become a household name. This keeps the conversation on sport and not on the immoral or dirty supply chain behind the company. Arts washing would be kindly backing the arts or backing new artists. The same motives play out behind the scenes. Ah, bless their cotton little this season corporate marketer socks. These plays are referred to again later in the book. Just to take stock of where we are. That completes my rant about conceited marketing tactics. Before that, I was explaining about scenarios for dopamine creation in the brain. And before that, I was doing my reverse countdown of the steps involved in jerking. We've nearly finished this rather long special note on dopamine. The reason for this special note is because it is on this point where habits of some of you have flown right off the effing rails. Daily sitting in front of a screen for hours, clicking on that next thing over and over and over, with a cold floppy member out that you will have all but forgotten about. That ain't jerking. I don't know what to call that activity. Does anyone? The tease and chase, then thrill or spill, is part of the overall jerk countdown, yes, but it is not the whole point of it. Over-magnification of this point can take you down some bad paths. Two of them to mention, just two for now. A. Step number four. The search for that something-something. Step number four going astray negatively impacts step five, mind overload, and step six, the nut, and step seven. How was it for you? In the end, you are left with that unsatisfying ending as mentioned at the start of this rundown. B. Step number four, the search for something-something, getting magnified can lead to a nut that is not about the pipes clearing out. The ejaculation is weak. The member can even be limp as you nut. Yep, I shit you not. The scenario has become that of a tormented addict scavenging for another high from a novel chatroom interaction or a particularly effed up piece of porn. Both are all about squeezing a high from a dopamine circuit. Additionally, if you get a desperate addict meeting a knowledgeable exploiter, that spells trouble. Trouble with a capital T. Listener, I stress to you, reiterate and highlight the words tormented addict scavenging. Not a great path to go down this one. That said, if that's you, I will touch upon this later again. You'll see more fully what I mean by this path in the forthcoming essay about my visit to a modern blockbuster chat room. That is to say, an old-style chat room that has been tricked up and put on steroids. Highs are baked into them. I refrain from naming sites in this book. One reason is because I'm a bit shy to do so. Another reason is to avoid triggering an addict with an impulse to go and investigate site XYZ on hearing its name. The modern-day blockbuster chat sites and their impersonating sites get a shakedown and a breakdown later in this book. Okay, that was a long but very important sidetrack. This completes number four, the search for something-something. Back now to the jerk-off steps countdown. Three. Let's get the party started. The physical beginning. In private, the member is whipped out and played with. It takes a little bit of time before you find your stride. It's about ensuring privacy and getting comfy. Soon you'll be jerking with serious intent. 2. Next chance I get. You are reasonably horny. You realise you are going to be jerking off soon and have made a decision to do so. You have a build-up in your nuts and tension in your mind and body that needs to be taken care of at the next available opportunity. You know those tasks that you had intended to do? None of those will be happening for a while. 1. Going about your day and boing. You are a sexual creature in a sexual world, going about your daily life. I think 99% of dudes cannot go 5 minutes without seeing or thinking about something sexual. It's a natural part of our brains. It's debilitating too, I know. Oftentimes we could be doing without thinking about sex when faced with a must-do pressing task. Nature seems to have given us a way to temporarily sweep out our minds, though. After we jerk, the mind is clear. Well, it should be. Anyways, dude, as sure as night follows day, you'll be needing a jerk soon. Now for clarity and ease of recall, I restate that jerk list by title, and this time listed chronologically. 1. Going about your day and boing. 2. Next chance I get. 3. Let's get the party started. 4. The search for that little something-something. 5. Mind overload. 6. The nut. 7. How was it for you? And 8. Snooze or cruise. Aside, horniness and life. I put it this way, guys. Horniness is always in your car. It's that mouthy buddy of yours riding shotgun. And if it's isn't shotgun, then it's in the rear seats, reminding you of something. Then if it's neither of those, that means it's in the driver's seat and it's taking you God knows where. It's always, always in the car. I do have one anecdote, though, that gives another take. Years ago, I read a book called The Practice. It's a short introductory book about Buddhism. It opened my eyes on a deep level as to how much you are overly in your own mind. It got me to constantly wonder, what does the word I mean? Does I necessarily start and stop at the body's boundaries? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. For 4 days, I did not play with myself or even think much about sex. The questions took me away from all that me stuff